Hello, everybody. This is the Gingerbread Man, and I would like to welcome you to my home. Thank you for being here. I'm sitting here in my room. It's snowy outside, slightly sunny. It's been a weird bit of winter this year. We've gotten a fair bit of snow, but it's always been so warm that it melts quickly. And when the snow falls, it melts and then it refreezes at night, and you have all that nice black ice. But it's been strange being inside this weekend. Yesterday, I made it my busy day, and today is my slow day because I'm still caught in this dichotomy of duality. And I worked really, really hard yesterday, and I did a lot of good stuff. Even though it was snowy, I had decided in my head that I would clean my house because it had been something that had been stressing me out for quite some time. And even though my floors are going to be fucked, I was still able to cross that thing off my anxiety list so that I can feel a little bit better about my circumstances. I was listening to this podcast. Her name's Allie Ward. She has ologies. I talk about her a lot because she's fantastic. But at the end of her episodes, she always shares this like little fact about her life that's more personal. And at the end of one of those episodes, she's like, I've been walking around anxious for the last 2 weeks because subconsciously I didn't want to clean my house. And for me, it's been months. You know, it's been a little bit too long since I've really got my house nice. And there started to be this like weird smell. And so I'd come in and I'd smell the stink and I'd be like, oh great, that's my house. So I took care of that. And I went to the food bank yesterday and I got my oil changed and I deep cleaned my bathroom. I did a lot. It was good. And I also got my taxes yesterday. So financially I'm feeling a little bit better. But today's my slow day, and today I'm not supposed to be doing much. This is the main thing I have to do, and not gonna lie, people, I was incredibly resistant this morning to wanting to sit and do this, even though I love doing this, you know, because I burnt so much energy yesterday. This part of me has decided that it's enough's enough, you know, and I'm really seeing how there's a lack of balance even with that decision. And being able to spread the slowness and the go-go and the action and the need for doing stuff, you know, how do we balance that all into one situationship where I feel like I'm caught in this like tug of war, like there's these opposing sides on my insides that decide different things differently. And it's almost like there has to be like a winner and a loser. And that necessitates that whenever one of these bits wins a fight, that means half of myself is incorrigible at that point. So I've been thinking a lot about this balance thing, and I've been obsessing continuously about duality through the frame of reference of Buddhism and Taoism. I've been writing out Taoist verses from the Tao Te Ching on my men's group that I've been administrating for the last couple months, and I just finished that one a couple weeks ago, which is 81 verses, which took me a little bit more than 81 days to get them all down. But they're all available on that page now. And so after finishing that one, instead of just going on to another Tao Te Ching, I have been going through Chuang Tzu, which Chuang Tzu is one of my favorites of all times. In fact, I'll share with you the verse that I just wrote this morning, and I'll tell you a funny story about it. So this is called The Man of Tao. The man in whom Tao acts without impediment harms no other being by his actions, yet he does not know himself to be kind or to be gentle. The man in whom Tao acts without impediment does not bother with his own interests and does not despise others who do. He does not struggle to make money and does not make a virtue out of poverty. He goes his way without relying on others and does not pride himself on walking alone. While he does not follow the crowd, he won't complain of those who do. Rank and reward make no appeal to him. Disgrace and shame do not deter him. He is not always looking for right and wrong, always deciding yes or no. The ancients said, therefore, the man of Tao remains unknown, perfect virtue, producing nothing. No self is true self, and the greatest man is nobody. So that's pretty eclectic, but we're looking through these dualistic lenses in a very subtle way, you know, because even within our spiritualism, if we're walking any path that gives us a degree of self-assessment, where we're starting to become more mindful and seeing the inner workings of our psyche and our emotionality and our body and the interconnections between me and everything else, this starts to brighten or at least focus the beam of concentration and awareness that we have as the mind's eye. Now, there's a lot of arguability here on what that eye is and whether it exists or not, but I do think that it is a facet of our being. And once we start to go and practice that and nurture that, there is this ability also to become arrogant. And we look around, at least I look around, at everybody who's not walking on a path and who's just living their lives, which honestly is their path. But I start to compare and contrast and say, you're not doing what I'm doing. Oh, no. And so I've set myself apart from everyone at this point, right? And arrogance. And I do think that this is a possibility within spiritualism. You see it a lot in religiosity, because any dominant religion, when it's fighting its way and it's trying to take its big old steamroller and smooth out any other opinions or beliefs, as we try to wrangle everybody into just Catholicism or any ism, we don't want people to have other beliefs and think for themselves. And so from that vantage point, those who are religious are looking down and have that same arrogance for everybody who does not hold their religion. But it can become subtle even within our own spiritual practices, even if they don't belong to an ism, even if it's something soft and full of heart, like Buddhism. What I found interesting about the verse I shared this morning was the last little bit about no selves and true selves. Within Zen Buddhism, this idea of no self is not only practical, but it's a crucial tenet of what it means to sit in meditation, is to look at self. And there's a big self, and then there's the personality, the little self. But being able to identify with this idea of consciousness is impossible. So it takes a disidentification to know self. Hence the word no self, even though it's murky and confusing and weird. So Chuang Tzu is doing his writing like probably around 300 BC. Don't quote me. I'm never good with the specifics here, but you can go look it up. And if you'd like to tell me, I'll put it on. But Bodhidharma, who is the first Zen patriarch, leaves India around 580. So this is 1,000 years before Buddhism starts to get its start in China. And I would even say that there's aspects of this no self and this transcendental non-ideation, even in Hinduism, that seeds Buddhism. And it's also co-evolving and existing, obviously, here in China as well. Now, you zoom out a little bit more, and you start to look at the Eskimos and all the Native American tribes and all their different mythology and the way that they related to nature and their ideas of what wisdom and knowing were. And you start to see a lot of the same similarities, honestly. At least I do. And so I'm starting to think that there's not even a right direction to look. And all it really needs is just enough intentionality to seek. I was scrolling, I don't know what scrooming is, but I was scrolling through Facebook earlier. And there's this person with this crazy name. It was like Ollioler. It's like some really bizarre name. And it's a white dude living in America. And his question, yeah, he was asking for advice on this group. But basically he was saying that there's an older person in his life that can never get his name right. And he thinks it's probably just because they're older or because they don't care. And then in the comment section, you see a lot of people trying to support them. But unfortunately, a lot of people were digging at him on his need for a name. This idea of individuality rears its head again. You know, having a name is so important. Having somebody call you what you want them to call you is very important in the scheme of individuality, especially in a culture where our individuality is prized as the most important thing ever. So I posted something that I usually do. I feel like I post the same thing to a lot of people in a lot of different situations, which is weird because it's kind of like having like a shotgun scattershot and I'm just shooting it at everything. But I basically told him that, well, the reason I even said this was somebody else had said something about how names aren't that important. And he replied, well, my name is a signification of my path. And so I said, we're all walking each other up this mountain that has a lot of different entrances and a lot of different ways to get up it. There's cliffs and then there's this whirligig path that circumvents it in big circles, slowly getting higher for those who can't handle elevation. There's climbing stuff. There's stuff that's inverted, you know, but we're all walking each other home and we're all watching each other walk up the same fucking mountain to the same exact point. And then I said, just be careful when you're trying to show somebody the moon and you point it out. Don't confuse the moon for your finger. And that someone might even be yourself. It's such a trip trying to find our place in this whole mess. And that's kind of what I want to inspire other people to want to try to do for themselves. Whatever you need to do in your life, in this objective reality for you, is a unique situation. But we're all sharing this world, and I'm convinced we're sharing this idea of consciousness, this energy form that continues forward towards something. This entropy that makes things fall apart and then rearrange themselves. This universal disorder is ordered in a way. So I've also been reading this guy named Sartre. And Sartre was a French philosopher. I know I've talked about him in the past, but I'm reapproaching his thick 600-page book on being and nothingness. And I love telling people about this because he's wild. He spends so much time just really looking into these discriminations between something and nothing. And What I'm convinced is his thesis is that they are practically the same thing. Being and nothingness, which is yet another very Buddhist idea, very Taoist idea, very old, ancient, wisdom-y sort of thing to say. But he does it in a very Western way. And that's why he has so many words. That's why it's 600 pages, not 81 verses that you can read in 20 minutes. It's because the East and the West have very different paths up the mountain. But when I see them together, it seems like they're talking about the same exact thing. This is this unique situation, homogenizing and holisticism. Holisticism. I like that. I doubt that's a word. But finding the duality, finding the opposition, seeing the hot and the cold. Part of what wisdom does is it makes the dissimilar appear to be more similar. You start to see the connections between things that at one point that ego and that discriminator said are so far apart they could never touch each other. But ultimately, all opposites and all oppositions are just two sides of one coin. It's one object, one thing with two facets. But knowing this intellectually is almost impossible. Almost. You can use things like metaphor to describe dissimilarities in their connectivity. You can use simile and all these weird word games to connect things together that seem like they shouldn't. And that is wisdom. That's where contextually our reason is getting as close to that border edge of non-reason as we could possibly ever get. And that's why I love metaphor. And that's why, even though I preach this idea of unreason, I still use my words constantly and I still read words constantly because I'm just trying to connect things together that don't make sense. And that's part of what gives me pleasure. It's kind of what I wanted to talk about and to remind myself of this whole game that I'm playing, that we're playing. And so that's my wordy path, but whatever you're doing might have nothing to do with that. It could have to do with your family, with how you're connecting the oppositions in your family. Could you mediate two people that haven't talked together in 20, 30 years? Could you show them how they're more similar than they think? How about in our work play, and we find all these tasks throughout our day when we're working that we've decided we don't want to do anymore, that we have an aversion to? Can we learn how much we love doing the thing we don't like? Bringing together these things that are seemingly so far apart. That's wisdom. And it requires us to partake and to be involved with it. We can't hesitate. We can't numb in order to see these things happening. It requires letting our emotionality out. It requires feeling emotions. I've so often prided myself on my light, cheery state when I'm feeling good, when I'm feeling happy, quote unquote. But I've been trying to give license and voice to my darkness. I've been trying to allow my shadow to speak, and giving it that time, I've had a lot of bad days. I've had a lot of uncomfortable times just sitting and letting my shadow speak. And because it's been so long since I've let it have a voice to listen to my own darkness, it has a lot to say. Like last Monday, I had almost an entire day of sitting uncomfortably in thoughts that I haven't allowed to be. And I'm glad I did, because I love that piece of who I am. I love my shadow. I love my darkness. That's part of who I am, and I won't run away from it, because becoming a whole human being requires taking my happiness and seeing how my happy self has more in similar with my shadow than I've ever given it. So, I'd really like you to consider some of these things. How can you pull together pieces? It might look very different in your life. Do you have a shadow? Do you have darkness that you don't give voice to? If we reflexively push things down, they will come back up from the subconscious. We can't segment pieces of our personality away and hide from it. All right, I'm going to read to you a couple of things that I wrote earlier this week. Maybe share a quote or two, and then we'll let Odin sign you off. I guess I've spoken about inspiring, looking for this seeking path, looking for building ourselves, looking for individuation so that we can grow, looking towards our own spiritualism. I call that creativity, living creatively. The other thing I didn't mention is that my other foot that I stand on the Gingerbread Man, my show, is love, unconditional love. I think consciousness comes from love. Love comes from connection. Love comes from seeing all these things that I'm hopefully talking about half correctly. Go be loving. Go love yourself. And once you can love yourself, it bleeds out onto others like a viral endemic. So, be love. I wrote this a couple days ago in response to my uncomfortable day that I was describing earlier, where I was having a lot of interactions with the darker parts of who I am. And a lot of this is tied to my meaning systems. And when I fall off of my heights, meaning seems to leave me, and I have a hard time finding meaning. So this is part of what I was writing about. So I referenced nihilism, which is a philosophy that is lack of meaning and the absence of having a reason. Here goes. Parts of yesterday were challenging. I lost my sense of security and dove headfirst into nihilism. In a discussion with a friend, they said I could never live a meaningless life. And I wouldn't disagree. No one is. We are purposeful in our being. But meaning doesn't strictly come from living, even though it may be a part, but it has very little to do with what we do. Meaning internally is a choice-like decision. When I have it, I am powerful, like my actions are in rhythm with it. When I lose it by my own hand, I become isolated in a selfish little box. Me, 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 and all in what appears to be a gross negative context. But what is that little piece who is speaking from his structured hovel, built in reason? That is my shadow, and I love him. I'm grateful for his strength, even when I'm lost in the void of purpose. Once I am isolated, I stop caring, because nothing seems to matter to this me, it seems. But, of course, everything keeps mattering outside of this little box in the world, the big open world. There are consistent lines of purpose. All you have to do is grab one and be involved with it. And then the next day, Odin was sent home, and I was having another low spot. Odin got sent home yesterday again, third week in a row. In typical fashion, my inner world was painted dark by neuroticism and anxiety over our security and his mental health. It's been a long run, me and him. It's never been easy, but it has always been the lots drawn by our life. I love him so much still, but darker emotions also color my disposition. Not making ourselves feel guilty for being in a hard spot is a bitter pill to swallow. It is a new day. And then again, writing about some of these darker things. Building the future forwards, I have all the vessels, tools, and byproducts that I need for my day. I have my body and mind, one to carry physical, the other mental sensation. I have my thoughts and actions fed by my emotions. These are convoluted pieces built of past and chance, and they fill my vessels. I sit tending them, carefully welding the cracks with the gold of wabi-sabi, celebrating and consecrating my mistakes as I distill them into knowledge. This refined product, paper thin, transparent, and fragile, like a paper recording being pushed out by a lie detector test. New material is constantly being fabricated. All that matters is noticing where we are next to that data. Can we ever possibly hope to vet all of it? But we must know how to read our lives. All right. And this is from chapter something from The Modern Alchemist by Richard Niona Miller. This is where they're describing some of the shadow kind of stuff again. Your self-image, which may have been traumatized during spiritual awakening and seeking, now has the chance for deep healing, which comes from within, bringing increased inner strength. Since some maturity is required, this path usually opens up after midlife and focuses around the paradox of opposites. Practically, this means you are confronted with such issues as assertiveness, aggression, self-indulgence, self-gratification, and the questions of dependence and independence. The healthy choice is for an interdependence, as is shown in many recovery systems. This holds true within the psyche as well. The vivifying qualities of the archetypes are experienced in feelings of rejuvenation, quickening, healing, and nurturing. There is an inherent risk in the illuminative way that has nothing to do with your previous mistakes, but is possible following any discipline. As you expose more of your real being, you activate and act out the powerful heights and depths of your potential for good or evil. Scrupulous honesty and integrity are the only safeguards that preserve you from spiritual suicide. Use faith, hope, and love as guides when you look into your own soul. Any self-hatred can be transformed into compassion, and compassion for oneself ultimately spreads outwards. Your shadow may have its beasts and demons, but the dark side of the hidden mind can reveal itself as that which no one should have to face within. Having seen the darkness within, the challenge is to continue with faith and courage. Simply remember that as the light shines on your vices and pseudo-virtues, you need only to continue the process of refinement. However, the antis keep rising. The more conscious you become, the more conscious you must be. As your inner light increases, you may seem worse to yourself than you had thought. Shining a bright light in a corner reveals all the dirt. Your shortcomings were there all along, but now the light has exposed them. There is no need for cynicism or losing heart. Simply continue with your meditation. And then a couple pages later, they quote Aristotle. And this is what Aristotle says. The greatest thing by far is to be a master of metaphor. It is the one thing that cannot be learnt from others, and it is also a sign of genius, since a good metaphor implies an intuitive perception of the similarity in the dissimilar. So, those ones hit me, and I felt like I wanted to share it. So, there you go. Thank you so much for being here. You give me immense purpose, because what I want to do here is I want to be somebody's support. I want to help. I want to make something that can help you. I want to have material that can bring you closer to you. That's my goal, is for you to be unified with yourself and to have that compassion so that you can accept all parts of your being, including your shadow, including your darkness. That's what I've been practicing with myself. I love you, and I love myself, and I want you to be able to feel that too. So, have a wonderful day. I'll let Odin tell you bye.
Hello, it's Ask Owen the Gingerbread Man. Sorry, I burped.
No, you're a little sick. Yeah, rough voice. It's okay.
No, yeah. I was drinking milk. That's why I was burped.
Do you like milk?
Yes.
What's your favorite part about milk?
It has different flavors.
Oh, it's not water. That's your favorite part about milk, is it's not water.
Yeah, there's like chocolate milk, strawberry milk.
I forgot about that. What about caramel milk?
Wait, what?
Yeah. Do you have any advice for people before we let them go?
No.
No?
No.
What about for you? Do you have any advice for yourself?
No.
Do you have any ideas on how you want to play your week?
No.
How do we want to stay calm?
I don't know.
Well, especially not knowing, I think we should think about it. What do you think?
I guess.
Okay. We'll work on that more today. All right, guys. Have a wonderful week. Bye.
Bye.